One of the most important things to make sure to do when breaking into the entertainment industry or wanting to further your entertainment career is beware of the dangers of comparison. Practice your craft, develop your craft, and reach your own audience. You know, to be grateful for what I have. I was so focused on what I didn't have yet. In my experience, when you don't cherish and honor the things you do have, you seem to lose them. So I would go to rehab in the winter and try to put myself back together and come and, you know, you can only survive white knuckling it so long. So, if, you know, you break or you cave or so I quit the show actually when I was 18, middle of a work day. I just said, screw you guys. I'm out of here.
I could only imagine.
Yep.
The mixture of fear and rage that comes over you.
Yeah. You know, it's a scary place.
So Jeremy Jackson is with us, did 159 episodes of Baywatch, right?
Counted. Sure.
159. Went by the name Hobie Buchanan.
Buchanan, yeah.
Buchanan. Also ended up on Celebrity Rehab about 10 years ago with Dr. Drew for some addiction. And then I realized, then I saw that you were with David Hasselhoff in Germany when he was performing because he's the Michael Jackson of like Germany there.
Yep.
Which is so interesting, you know, David Hasselhoff is. I know David Hasselhoff. He's a legend over there.
He's a king of reinventing
himself. He's a king of reinvention. But for you, how did you find yourself in the profession of acting? Being that you were in Orange County.
Yeah. It's a funny story. Serendipitous, meant to be, what have you. First of all, thanks for having me on the show so much.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too.
And to kind of, you know, form a little, connection and unity together. I appreciate the opportunity, man. I'm blessed to be here. The acting thing, like, was my full-blown passion. I was obsessed. I saw Michael Jackson on TV. I saw Elvis Presley. You know, I saw Knight Rider and I saw these cool guys with just seas of people praising them and you're having this sense of power. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have that. I want that and I believe I can do that. Like, I believe that's in me, whether it was singing, dancing, acting, outfits, you know, impersonations, whatever it was, I practiced it religiously on my own, having no idea what the entertainment industry was.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I have this little single mom. We're way down in Orange County and she hears about a kid's agent and doesn't know who the kid's agent is, you know, if she's big or good or what it's even like. She has no clue. None of my family came from the entertainment industry. So it was just kind of a shot in the dark. Turned out to be one of the biggest agents in LA, represented the Olsen twins, represented kids from Saved by the Bell. She had it going on, went up, had that little face to face. And I was a, you know, just a rambunctious, personable, kind of like an adult trapped in a kid's body. You know, right. I'm making eye contact. I'm shaking hands and I'm like 6 years old. You know, I knew it was time to push. It was time to go. This is what I wanted.
And was that the first big gig that you did or did you have a whole bunch of other acting gigs
before? Yeah, I started acting when I was six. So my first job I ever got was a Mattel commercial for the color changing cars. Okay. And that turned into seven commercials. So the first one was like slam dunk.
Easy money.
Boom. I'm the Mattel kid. And it's right. Frosted Mini Wheats. It's M&Ms. It's McDonald's. It's campaigns. It's TV shows, movies. Played Fred Savage in a flashback on the Wonder Years. So hung out with the cast of the Wonder Years. Did Santa Barbara soap operas, all kinds of stuff. I was getting jobs left and right.
Got it. And then at what age did you get Baywatch?
10.
10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Who were you the son of?
David Hasselhoff.
So on Baywatch, you were the son of David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, David was like the single parent, you know, living on the beach, having a career, having babes, you know,
and then trying to parent. You grew up with a single mom. Did you kind of look at him as being your father?
Oh, totally. I mean, I had no dad. I always wanted a dad. I really didn't have any other male figures in my life. So I was hyperactive, dyslexic, you know, starving for attention and approval kid. Like, Knight Rider's my dad. It's my dream come true, you know?
And he had your back fully.
You know, I say he's like a big brother to me. You know, I put myself in his shoes now. He was 30 and a superstar. And here's this 10-year-old kid that's like wanting to go in his trailer all the time, wanting to follow him all around. He's like, geez, kid, you know, like I'm trying to hook up with these chicks or like I'm trying to be a famous guy. It's like, I don't have kids yet. Like, give me a break.
But he wasn't or was he eventually like, look, kid, you know, you're give me some space.
No, we got into it a couple times. I called him names and walked off. It was kind of, you know,
a big brother.
It was kind of like a big brother.
And how many years would that be that you did that? I mean, see, how many years were you on that show?
I did Baywatch for 11 years.
So all the way from until you were 21. And
21, we did this big Baywatch Hawaiian wedding, like TV movie thing. Yeah.
Wow. And you,
and it's the number one show in the history of the world.
At that point, you spent more time on that show, more than half your life. Yeah. By the time you were 21, doing the show Baywatch.
Yeah. And if it wasn't summers on the beach, you know, on teen magazines and signing autographs, it was winters in Europe touring with my music.
And looking back at yourself, what lesson do you think you learned in that process?
Oh, man. The most valuable lesson that is so easy to forget, that, you know, to be grateful for what I have. You know, and that the car or the fame or the chick, you know, whatever that is, doesn't bring happiness, you know, because when I was the it kid turning down $1 million movie roles, getting in and out of limos, 30 grand to do a little voiceover, you have 15 minutes. Okay, I'll do it. You know, it was just rolling in. I was so focused on what I didn't have yet or where I needed to be, where I wanted to be, what wasn't happening, rather than really cherishing what I did have. And in my experience, when you don't cherish and honor the things you do have, you seem to lose them.
Did you end up saving that money and investing it properly, or was it more?
You know, single mom, you know, we didn't come from money. So it was a lot of, you know, cars and rent and lawyers, and you get screwed in the entertainment industry. We didn't know about that stuff, so the contracts weren't always, you know, in
favorable,
my
favor. Yeah. And there was like stuff behind the scenes, but you can't prove it.
Whatever can happen will happen, you know. So yeah, my agent's daughter was a drug addict. Lonnie O'Grady from Eight Is Enough. She stole over $200,000 from me. We found out after she died of a overdose. There's so many little things, you know.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So you went through that experience and you're 21 years old. And then what happens?
Well, you know, I chose to go like full force into partying. You know, honestly, I had kind of been dabbling a lot. I had already been in a couple rehabs. I had already gotten in a little trouble.
By 21.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know.
So the show was constantly trying to get you cleaned up.
Pretty much, you know.
You're the type, because I've worked with a lot of shows and a lot of young adults or teenagers for different movies through the years. And I know because you're an investment, they can't replace Hobie from Baywatch overnight.
Yeah.
You know, they can't kill you off. So they need to make sure you keep your head straight.
Yeah. And it's a lot of pressure for me too, you know? So I would go to rehab in the winter and try to put myself back together and come and do a good job. And, you know, you can only survive white knuckling it so long. So, if, you know, you break or you cave or, you know, my performance was dwindling, you know? And, so I quit the show actually when I was 18. It was just too much. It was too much for me. Middle of a work day. I just said, screw you guys. I'm out of here. Wow. You know, I couldn't remember my lines. I hadn't slept. It was really rough. You know, I was embarrassed. You know, I was really embarrassed and I wasn't able to tell at the time I was embarrassed, you know, or that I was afraid, or that I was, you know, covering up for my insecurities and my lack of abilities. You know, I
so
just
what
thought
do
it was
they do
else.
Because they have these huge elaborate director sets. Like what do they do when an 18-year-old goes on Baywatch and says, I can't do this. I'm out.
Yeah. It was a big deal. You know, agents and managers and everyone was freaking out. They tried to ride it out that I went off to go see my mom, or tried to beg and plead with me to come back and just do a couple little pickup scenes so they could weave it in and make it seem.
Why do you think you quit it? Do you think that was just self-sabotage?
Yeah. I mean, of course it was self-sabotage, but, you know, I was under like heavy duty drug addiction, man. I was in full force drug addiction, man. And I didn't understand what that was at the time. You know, you party, do some coke with friends, and you're 16, you got a fake ID, and you're the cool guy with some money and buying the limos. You think it's fun. You know, you think it's what you do when you're a rock star and when you're famous. You don't understand what's the deeper causes and conditions, the spiritual sickness that's right. going on. You know,
so
I had
you
no
just
clue.
Kept going. So you kept going at 21. It's almost like a kid off to college with no boundaries, yep. no responsibilities. You got the total fuck it. I'm going to do what I want.
I'm the man of the house. I'm paying the bills. I'm employing everybody.
I got money.
Mm-hmm. People need me, you know, so there's a
How
power
long did that
trip
last?
There. Ugh, maybe a couple years.
Before yeah. rehab again.
Yeah. Oh, not, I mean, I went probably to a couple of rehabs inside of that couple of years, but at 20, I got sober at 20. So when I came back to do the big Baywatch movie, I was 21 and I was sober already. So, you know, the real bad stuff happened around 18, but 20, I got sober for the first time. That lasted over 12 years. Wow. You know, it was a great stretch of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great stretch of life. And
12 years.
Yeah. I kind of was over the entertainment industry at that time. I mean, I did.
So you got sober and kind of were like, I'm over entertainment.
Well, I was so beat up from what I had done to myself. And, you know, the higher you are, the further you have to fall. So, you know, crawling back and asking for a job, just, you know, a little too much pride there to do that. So I just took some little normal jobs and did some telecommunications, calling people, selling stuff, tried to work my way back up the ladder little by little, you know, slow briety, they call it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Don't get too big too fast. It worked.
It worked until you were 33 years old.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Oof, man. You know, I had 13 years clean and sober. I was grown, you know. I had a beautiful house, two cars, an amazing wife, a dog.
And what were you doing for work? Like
I was training
personal training.
Yeah, celebrities like Ray J was one of my clients, C-suite executives, big underwear campaign models. I was like the go-to guy to really get in shape.
I think his hit single is I Hit It First.
Yeah. Or something. I like Sexy Can I. It's a pretty good one.
Okay, I'll check that
That's
out.
It's a good song, actually. Shout out to Ray J.
Yeah, Ray J.
Yeah, yeah. So I was doing good. Life was good. And I thought I had really stopped doing like a lot of mentorship with other young men. The calls that I used to love started to become a little bit of a burden. Just, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness started to come back. And I made a decision at that point in my life that it was time to focus on other things. It was time to focus on career. I let my career, I let my wife, I let the exterior LA facade of look at how good I'm doing now become kind of like my number one, you know? So I lost the sense of urgency, desperation, that gift of desperation I once had for being a really down and out drug addict. And I thought, you know, I was young. I wanted to die. I had so much pressure. I like hated everything. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I was going through puberty. I had millions of dollars. It was like weird. You know, I can probably have beers with my chick in the jacuzzi in Maui. Like how it seems if it got out of hand, it would be so easy to pull it back.
Maybe that was something just when I was younger, it really wasn't that bad.
Yeah. How could it turn into this big catastrophe all over again? For sure.
And how long before it turned into a catastrophe?
Oh gosh. It was about a year and a half in, and my relationship, strangely took a split. No one's really sure. My wife somehow developed some kind of, I'm not a therapist or doctor, some kind of late onset schizophrenia or a major mental disorder that caused a lot of like paranoia and really gnarly panic attacks, disassociation, some really weird stuff that because I was so enmeshed in this relationship and focused on building this life and fixing her and being the superhero to tackle any problems and, you know, nothing can hold us back. I ignored a lot of big warning signs, you know, I kind of rationalized and justified these
things. Was she younger than you?
A little younger. Yeah.
So how much younger?
She was 30 when I was 33.
It's still odd.
It's too late, right? I don't know what it is.
Schizophrenia.
Yeah. It was weird.
Had to have been wild for you and really confusing.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was I broke down, you know. People say you don't really have mental breakdowns. The mental doesn't break down, but I definitely broke down. And because I was already drinking, the drinking was a nice solution, I thought at the time. And you know, you get drunk enough for enough days, depressed and lost and lonely, walked away from the career stuff, walked away from the house. She stole a bunch of money. She went out in the press and said a bunch of things. You
got the fuckets.
I got the fuckets, man.
You got the fuckets.
Yeah.
Eventually the volcano erupted with the fuckets.
Yeah. I went back in full force.
That's what we say, right? Whenever, especially those, in recovery or those who are struggling to get sober. I always think it's funny. Anything that's kind of vulgar with drugs, alcohol that I discuss, or let's say I post on social media, I always get people going, you really shouldn't say that. I'm like, no, you should never go to a 12-step meeting because it is so grimy, dirty, crazy how we talk. And that's how we
make light of it. We kind of make light,
fun. It's already too fucking serious.
Yeah. The stuff we have lived through pales in comparison to the word fuck.
And so you went full force at some point. You got the fuckets. Mm-hmm. And then.
Yeah. What's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah. I'm done trying.
You get a divorce.
Still not divorced, amazingly enough. Still not divorced.
Did you see her ever?
No, she's all over the media. She's toothless, homeless, refuses help.
Was she an actor?
She had a pretty colored past.
Did she like a dancer, stripper, porn star?
Yeah,
all that. So yeah, you're like, you had
the broken bird syndrome.
Or a sexy bird. I mean, it depends on the year.
She was very sexy.
But right now it's a broken bird.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're still married, but at some point you didn't live together anymore and you made a decision.
I haven't seen her for 7 years. We split, haven't seen her since that just
you
one
haven't
night.
Seen her in 7 years?
No, no.
So then what was kind of the intervention that took place this last time? Was it legal or was it just demoralization?
Legal. I was looking at 7 years in prison.
For what?
For assault. Assault with a deadly weapon. I had been involved in a couple.
Were you doing jiu-jitsu back then?
Yeah.
Why didn't you have your grappling?
Well, because they got guns. These guys got guns, you know?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu won't do much with guns.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually did. I arm locked the guy who had me at gunpoint with my shoulder and my neck. I stepped through and he had the gun behind me and I just clamped him. You know, he was trying to pull his arm away and I had a knife and it was bad. He got hurt and I got locked up. And
was that over drugs?
He was trying to jack me. Yeah. He was trying to rob me. Some other people stole my car and I got into an altercation with them. There was two guys and a girl.
You are a psycho on drugs.
Yeah, I am.
Could you imagine Tony him on drugs? I feel, you know, because why I say that is you've done jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You've, at a young age, got the point of view where you will walk away from things.
Oh, yeah.
Even when they're going well.
Yeah.
And can get to a place where you're not going to be rational. You've had a marriage that ended up not being what you thought it would be.
I thought it was everything.
And it decompensated.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're probably losing money at this point or spending money and you're hanging out with unsavory people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have someone who decides that they're going to jack you.
Uh-huh.
I could only imagine
yep.
the mixture of fear and rage
yeah.
that comes over you.
Yeah, because there's a lot of suppressed anger there.
Totally.
Know? That's why I'm using, you know? That's why I'm getting high. This is all I have. And I've just submitted and surrendered to having shekels, to having a bag of dope and a backpack full of clothes. And you think you're going to take that from me? I'm trying to surround myself with the lowest of low so I cannot feel low. And you're going to take away the only thing that is giving me survival. You know, it's a scary place. It's Armageddon, like doomsday.
So you went to jail because you pulled a knife on him.
I stabbed him.
Yeah. How many times?
I think he had like 119 stitches. So I'm not really sure.
So you were painting him with the knife.
Yeah. He was a 250-pound gangster named Wacky with clown tattoos all over his face. And he had been falsely imprisoned me at gunpoint for hours. And so I had to wait for the right moment, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it was really intense. But these are the type of, it was like, this was an everyday thing. It's disgusting out there.
Is he still alive?
You know, he's still alive, yeah.
Is he still in prison or out? Or
he was actually wanted for a shooting a year prior. So he ended up doing a whole bunch of time when they finally caught up with him.
Well, in a lot of ways, you helped bring to light the criminal that was out there in the world.
You got to find a positive in every negative, man. Yeah.
So you, after a stabbing, is that why you got arrested?
No, that's why the second time when I was involved in a carjacking, there was two guys and a girl. I stood up for myself and the girl attacked me and she had some wounds, right? So, never stabbed the girl, never stabbed a girl, but she was hurt and I had a knife and it was just drug infested car theft thing. So, you know,
you
I'm guilty.
You stole the car.
And they stole my car.
They stole your car. Oh, it's just a whole drug.
Well, I'm
CD,
the white boy.
Shady,
with, they think I have money.
And what were you using?
Meth.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then what happens after that?
Looking at 7 years in prison, scared shitless, you know, ankle monitor, some time in jail, bailed out to go to rehab, you know, closely monitored, all this stuff. I went to LA County Jail for like 4 months, got out and went to Pasadena Recovery Center for like 4 months.
Yeah.
Left Pasadena Recovery Center, went out to Temecula, went to another.
Better Tomorrow or one of those.
It was actually called, I forget what it's called, but it was a new place. It was really nice. And I ended up working there and living there. So
yeah, how did you afford Pasadena Recovery being you had no money?
I had done celebrity rehab there and I knew the people there. I had a good relationship with them. So they let me go on a really low, low end stuff. Yeah. Friends paid for it. Family paid for it. Many amends I've made since then.
And that
then.
Was this last time.
Yeah.
This is the last time it's
a big, big, scary thing that, you know, I never have to do again. And now I'm armed with the tools to make sure that doesn't happen again, which is great.
And you now are, and I know we traded messages on, you know, Instagram. I was asking you to come on this podcast. And then at the same time you said, hey, we should sit down. I was just going to hit you up and send you a message.
Yeah.
What were you wanting to talk about?
Well, you know, I've gotten to this point in my recovery where I'm self-defeating, you know, like ego death is where I find myself. The peace, the purpose is in demolition of self-centeredness, right? Mm-hmm. And the manifestations of self-centeredness, what I need, how I need to be seen, the character I've assigned myself, what I want out of situations in order for me to be okay. My deep-seated ideas of what relationships like this are supposed to look like. My deep-seated idea of what a real man would do in this situation. You know, my sense of security, my ambition, my pride, all these things, right? And, you know, I've found that by having a desired outcome that I'm set on, that I want, I'm usually left unsatisfied, right? Okay. People, places, and things let me down. But to be this, you know, this spiritual being having a human experience and trying to stay out of God's way as much as I can to allow the adventure of life to unfold in front of me and just be a part of that and see where I can be useful and beneficial to others. Like I get all this freedom and it's rad and I'm in the flow and like things are happening for me and through me instead of to me. I'm like, have these days that are great. I'm like, I love this. But then there's certain areas of life where I feel like, how do I take my power back yet be powerless, admittedly powerless, right? without pride? How, where do I have power with pride?
Like, so give me an example.
Like families, you know? So my mom and my sister, you know, I've put them through hell. Uh-huh. They've been ride or die. They have sacrificed so much for me. My sister was agoraphobic basically for years. You know, I was young. I had cops come into the house. I had allegations of this and that, unsavory creatures coming in and out. It's like, my mom and the finances, gosh, we were supposed to be millionaires and, you know, we're just eking by. It's the three of us against the world.
So what would you say is the most anxiety creating thing right now?
Now, when I want to make a decision, hey, I'm going to date this girl. I'm going to do this. I'm getting a place, whatever. They're like, they're so scared. You know, there's a lot of fear and they want to control my life. And like, how do I not? Nope. Drawing a line in the sand. This is what I'm doing now, because that's usually been my downfall. When I say, nope, I'm doing it my, I don't want to do it my way. You know? So there's this, where's that, you know, how do I allow, but have desire, like outcomes that aren't, I'm not glued to, and I'm not hurting other people at the same time.
You're saying, well, you did put together 13 years of sobriety. Mm-hmm. And
I've been sober 16 out of the last 20 years. I've had little blips.
And right now you have about how much?
I have a year right now.
A year right now. Okay.
Mushrooms. I did the magic mushrooms and reset it.
Got it. So you did a spiritual trip type of thing. Yeah. And didn't tell your sponsor.
Exactly.
And heard about it from someone who
I actually extracted a lot stuff that we can all get naturally without it, you know. Would have maybe been a little more worthwhile to do the digging without it. Enhanced versus unenhanced there's a little more pride of ownership and unenhanced spiritual development. Uh-huh. But I did peek behind the blinds pretty heavy duty, and it's cool.
Okay, so for that period of time, the only thing you did in the last 3 years was mushrooms?
Yeah.
Okay. And how many times do you do mushrooms?
I did it for like a summer.
You know, microdose,
a little microdose LSD, tried the DMT, hallucinogen.
What do you want more of?
Helping other people, being of resource to other people is the most rewarding to me for sure.
So you want, but do you want that to tie in with your finances or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because there's just, for some people, they have this idea that if you help people, that if you were to accept money, that's anything but a very low price, you're somehow a charlatan or taking advantage of someone. Right. And for a lot of people, that can get in the way because people want to pay for services. If I went to a therapist and the therapy's free, I have a different relationship to getting therapy than if I have to pay $200 an hour.
Right.
And so a lot of therapists and coaches will undersell what they can offer because there's this idea, even right now, I'm trying to have a marriage and family therapist, Logan. She runs the front of CAS centers. I own an outpatient center. The school will not allow her to do her hours with us. They only allow the therapist to do hours at not-for-profits.
Mm-hmm.
Makes no fucking sense. Okay. She could get paid while she's doing her job.
You're a licensed place.
Licensed place. And I've worked in not-for-profits, and a lot of them are hell holes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't going to be able to afford their own life. But there's this idea that somehow those trenches, when really we need more people that bring it about, that you pay to get help.
Right, right.
And so I just wonder if part of it for you is really defining what it is you're most wanting to do, because helping people, you're right, it feels good. Mm. There's 1,000 different ways to help people. Mm-hmm. And it's, how do you do the Jeremy Jackson authentic way of helping people? I know you've developed a program.
Yeah.
Is that the program you want to lock into and put all your energy into, or are you thinking there's other arenas?
Well, you know, I feel very blessed. I mean, you know, I like when things just come to me and happen very organically and naturally. You know, I have a new business, a buddy of mine that we've been doing sobriety together for over 10 years. You know, we're launching a new protein shake shop, green juices and vitamin C infused and chia seed, as thickeners. There's really, really good dynamic superfood protein shakes. So I always seem to have good things coming. But you're right. There is that moment where I feel, like, what would I want somebody to do for me? You know, like go out of their way, go like give me a special discount or like bless me in some way. You know, I often we compare our insides to other people's outsides, you know? So I think they might be nervous about me taking their money, but really it's me nervous about, does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially when something's more new and where it's not a tangible product, you know, it can become a little more, it's less challenging when it's, okay, here's my shoe. So this is the cost of the shoe. And there's no guilt in terms of what the cost of the shoe is.
Right.
With self-help and personal development or helping people, the lines aren't that clear. And so through people's own insecurity, I remember back in the day I did interventions. And at different times, I would even get paid a few $100. By the end, I was getting thousands of dollars because of the years of experience I had doing them. But the feeling didn't change from a few $100 or a few thousand.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's how secure do I feel? And you can still be aligned with the universe and God conscious and know your self-worth.
Yep.
And being able to take years of wisdom of what you've experienced is absolutely what a lot of people may want if you sell it and package it.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
But it's hard sometimes trapped in our own minds to get there.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
I mean, you know, I'm on television. I write books. I can tell you that I do less in the trenches helping people, especially for money. I mean, and I miss that, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes the more successful you get in a particular craft, you lose the art of why you do what you do.
The dirty hands, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I love getting a phone call and flying into a city and, you know, trying to find Johnny in the streets of Milwaukee.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done some interventions.
And
it's awesome.
It's fun, right? And you get outcomes and it's rewarding. And I think, you know, you clearly are passionate. You clearly have lived a life and are passionate about so many things, and you're resilient. And I think that if I were in your shoes, I would be leaning into what is it that you're wanting most to do. If you're wanting to help people, like I said, there's 1,000 ways to help people. You know, what are some ways to help people that are really desirable to you? And take away any of the, you know, like I thought I really wanted to help families until I started working, young adults, until I started working with the parents.
Yeah, that's
all. And I was like, I don't really want to work in the youth program, right? Thought I wanted to do it.
Yeah, that's a tangled knot there.
But if you could paint the picture for yourself, what do you think you would want?
Yeah. I mean, being being a provider of solution and you know, serenity
so
in a world that's so chaotic.
Yeah,
gosh, that's the tough thing because I could do any of it. That's, you know, just, you know, just be, man, just be and allow life to happen and be in the right place at the right time. That's like, there's this duality, you know, of like marketing, promotion, pushing myself. Yeah, I've talked to agencies. You could be the SWAT guy in a movie like that.
The challenge with, I would say, the program.
Yeah.
So the program works for the program.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, from my experience, well, maybe we'll try to apply every aspect of the program to every aspect of life, like attraction rather than promotion. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? If you don't promote something, you're robbing people of the opportunity to know and receive what it is you have to offer.
Yeah. Speaking of which, check out Shake Addict, shakeaddict.com, my new superfood infused vegan protein shake shop.
Shake Addict, you better get it before it, before someone, you know, consumes all of it.
Yeah.
It's addictive.
One is too many, a thousand's never enough.
Yeah.
That's our slogan.
That is it really?
Yeah. Or that's everyone's right. Addicted to something. Might as well be the good stuff.
That's a good one.
You'll have to come to the grand opening.
I would love to. Where is it?
In Orange County.
In Anaheim? Yeah,
no, it's going to be probably in Newport Beach. We got Miami, Austin, Texas, New York. We got a whole big rollout plan. It's going to be pretty awesome.
But I'm part of this, and we'll talk after the podcast too. But I would love to help you if there's any way.
Thank you, man. Absolutely. I, you know, I always want to stay in a state of reasonableness. Always want to be evolving. Always learning. I know very little. My eyes have been opened so much. I mean, what I believe and think today could be totally null and void tomorrow. I could have an epiphany tonight that'll change my whole perspective on stuff. And I actually look forward to those. So yeah. I'd love to work with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, but right now I'm trying to help you get specific. Okay. I know it's uncomfortable for you.
Yeah.
A little bit, I would sense. Is it?
Yeah, for sure.
Which is, the reality is it's uncomfortable for everyone because it does play it a little safe to go, I'm just waiting for what's going to come around and I'm just going to, there's no risk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no risk because we get to chill.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the power to make decisions. And so if we could identify, and I would love for you to be thriving, and you are building a smoothie place, and maybe there's an adjacent approach that works, but would you rather be a behind the scenes or like in front of the camera type guy?
I think I prefer to be behind the scenes. I like to believe in and promote others and to lift others up. If that called for me to be in front of the camera to do it more effectively, absolutely I can. I got a PhD in front of the camera. You know, speaking is not a problem for me. It would just kind of be situational, but yeah.
Yeah, because I even think you could help me out probably with how to be in front of the camera. You've done so many episodes, so many interviews. You've talked about so much. Like, that is a gift. That's a gift, especially for people in the rooms and in recovery, and how to show up and how to present yourself and how to go after what it is you really want. Like, that's an inherent gift that you've been trained in and you're an expert in. Do you get where I'm going?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's something people want.
Yeah.
They want to learn how to show up. You know, even you, Tony, you know, you've been trying to get into you. Tony has a big social media following, but at the end of the day, Tony wants to be working and wants to be a respected actor.
Yeah.
Right?
It became something that I wanted, yeah. I think over time, being behind the camera, now being in front of the camera, I'm like, oh, I wouldn't be opposed to acting.
Well, ask him. He's here.
I wanted to ask you something a little separate from this, but
okay.
You said when you were 18, mm-hmm. right, you had one of those days where you just stormed out, you quit. If you can go back to when you were 18, what would you tell yourself?
You know, that's tough because you get into like, you know, changing the whole time frame, you know, butterfly effect, you know, if it would have any effect at all. I don't think there's anything I could have said to myself at that time that I would have listened to, honestly, unfortunately. I guess if I were to go back and see myself at 18, I would probably just plant the seed that whatever I thought I had, or I thought I wanted, or I thought I needed, that there was way more and way better, and to be, keep that question mark alive, whatever mistakes I had to go on and make, but just keep that thought alive that whatever I thought was going to complete me, that there was much, much more to look forward to.
Damn.
Damn. That's a lot. No, but I'm curious, Tony, because we have someone who's biggest television show ever. You want to act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to push you out of your comfort zone too.
Yeah.
You got someone who could probably teach you a hell of a lot about how to fucking do it.
I know, but I'm trying to think of what exactly is it that
everything.
I want to like.
Everything.
Okay. What would you recommend someone like me? I post a lot of videos on social media, preferably like in a comedic way. Nothing too serious, because I feel like I don't do impersonations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really.
But you got personality.
I got personality, yeah. But I don't really do impersonations. Like, I think that's one of my biggest struggles, is I see people who are in my realm of on social media who are getting gigs,
mm-hmm.
but they can impersonate. They can like bring a different character. Like, I feel like I can't do that.
Okay.
What would you recommend someone?
Well, first and foremost, avoid the deadly, deadly pitfall of comparison.
Mm.
That'll make you so miserable. Second of all, you know, what I see in people who make it is, you gotta eat, sleep, and breathe it, man. You gotta be so passionate about it. Be willing to do it for free all the time. Constantly thinking about the craft, you know? And your story, man, your story, who's, you know, people will talk about demographic, but I think when building a brand, you want to think about psychographic, you know, what's the mind of the person that you're talking to, and how can you connect with them, relate to them, or how do they relate to you? So putting that persona out, that's your shampoo bottle. You know, it's like you got Pert Plus and you got like Selsun Blue. They're side by side. They're exactly the same thing inside. But what is it about the outside that makes someone want to buy that one over that one? What is it about the campaign? You know, what's your campaign? And I know people relate to the story, man. It becomes less and less about what you can and can't do, and more about who you are. That makes people want to see you succeed. And unfortunately, what also might want to see people take you down, which is a whole nother, you could just go for the hate me, you know, hate me. Yeah. All of a sudden you got 2 million followers because people hate you, you know? So it's like, it's a business like any other business. And, you know, seeing as how self-obsessed, self-focused, self-centered, and self-conscious you have to be about building the brand and reaching people, speaking to the audience, you know, like, hey, taco lovers, like, that's my brand. I'm taco. Hey, taco lovers, I got something for you, taco. You know, you got to like really talk to them. And there's like, you know, different ways you can do that. You can get really creative with how you reach in and grab their attention. But also finding your peace too, having a meditation practice, having a group that you belong to outside of that, so you can hold on to yourself and you don't lose yourself in that whirlwind of look at me, because it's a real thin line, you know?
Yeah, the narcissism level is insane. Do you think the narcissism has increased with social media compared to back when you were on the biggest television?
Yeah. I almost don't even want to work out anymore. You know, it's like, I feel all like, this, you know, like.
What do you mean?
Just the, like, fitness, you know, just as an industry, like fame, you know, there's people that are so famous just for the way they put their makeup on. It's like so crazy. Like, it feels very inauthentic almost to like do a lot of the stuff I used to love.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu's still safe.
Jiu-jitsu, we
have a safe place.
I've said this before. I've found that a lot of coaches that even have sold a huge amount of books. Their whole business is, their model is being influencers, and they've sold a lot of books. They're not really about getting in the trenches, and they haven't really experienced a lot of what that's like. And I do think that everyone, they have their own journey and everyone has their own path. I could say I've struggled with that a lot, is the narcissism. I think I probably have said this to you so many times in the last 2 years, Tony, right? I'm like, the level of narcissism that it requires to build a brand is, it's hard sometimes to deal with the, because I find myself insufferable sometimes in it because it's not right, but yet I'm putting myself out there.
It's like a necessary evil.
It's a necessary evil. Yeah,
you got to see it as that and not lose yourself in that.
But it sounds like what you're saying is, don't compare yourselves to others in that.
Mm-hmm. Find your voice.
Find your voice. Find your community outside of whatever that is.
For sure.
So if you're friends with just that whole culture community, it's going to start to feel empty.
Oh yeah.
And you're going to lose yourself.
Yeah. If your sense of success is based on how many views you did or didn't get, you're asking for hardship and hard time, you know?
Yeah. Do you find that you enjoy it any more or less? Like, Tony has had deals with beers, Taco Bell, you know, all these, he has a very active, big following.
Nice.
Do you find that you enjoy it?
Repost me, bro.
Yeah, repost you, bro. Do you find that you love it more or less than when you, say, a few years ago?
Honestly, I was about to say less, but honestly, I love it more.
Nice.
Because I feel like in a way I'm doing what I want to do. I'm pushing the content that I want to push. I'm making money by doing it, which is also amazing. I'm no longer doing it just for free, which is like, I've been doing this for free for a minute now. So it's like, finally I get like recognition where I'm like, all right, cool. And I'm also being represented because I feel like there's not a lot of gay Latinos who are out there making content with, you know, well, yeah, of course El Pollo Loco, but like Jack in the Box, you know, like of course Estrella Jalisco, which it's funny because I was going to tell you about this today, but there is a potential car brand deal that I might be getting.
And they want a gay Latino?
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, so they just reached out to me, but they never specifically say we want a gay Latino, which I kind of like that even more.
They probably can't.
They can't. But I'm like, I like the fact that it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like but I get to put my own little spin on it. So I'm like, it's something that I'm like, I've learned to love, but I do love and I respect what you say because it does help. Like, especially when you say like, don't worry about other people. Like, just stay in your lane. Like that means a lot because it makes me more focused. Like, all right, let me just stop worrying about what he's doing or what she's doing. And
that has to be you. That's probably a big lesson you've learned because you were at the biggest point in your career. And then now, especially with social media, you're looking around at the landscape. And it's hard to go, don't compare yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm be more focused on keeping what I have than what's gone. Or
has that been with you this last year easy for you? Or is it something that is more recent?
Like with social media?
Yeah.
You know, I've always been being famous or being on Baywatch, you know, it was a blessing and a curse. You know, I found early on to be gracious for the benefits, you know, if it, you know, makes an introduction a little more memorable for somebody or lubes a conversation or, you know, what have you, cool. But I've come to actually realize that a lot more organic conversations or interactions or introductions to people that have no idea I'm under a lot of less false pretenses or assumptions or,
you know,
judgment.
The interesting thing is when I asked you to come on the podcast, I hadn't even realized you were ever on Baywatch.
Perfect. I'd love to hear that.
Really? Why?
I don't know. Just, I guess I feel like, what I've overcome and what I've accomplished, in my life in the past, few years, I feel a lot more proud of than being on a TV show, you know? Yeah.
Your self-worth has no part of being on that television show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of more of a splinter in the side, but it, sometimes it's a benefit. Sometimes it's a benefit. Cool. We'll go with that. You know, but
why would it be a splinter in the side?
Dating, you know, dating, it's a big splinter in the side. People assume, oh, he said that because he thinks he's cool, because he's used to be on TV, or is he acting, or is he telling the truth? I can't tell. Like, a lot of weird misconceptions. You got to stuff that's not just, you know, organic. Like, hey, I'm a person having a conversation with another person. It's like, there's preconceived notions there that you got to like play, you know, down to, or like, you know, show your underbelly, kind of like, hey, I promise I'm not a fucking child star, like thinking I'm all cool. I'm just a regular guy, you know?
Yeah. And you were a child star, and then you went on Dr. Drew's show.
Yeah.
So what now? Your message now and what you're passionate about. So I'm looking at your Instagram, and there's a ton. Tony, when we were talking about you coming on, Tony's like, he's jacked.
I was like, he's jacked.
His body's crazy. Tony's like, he's hot.
Yeah. You were like, you're just saying that because of his beard.
I'm
like,
yeah, that's what I said, because Tony likes beards.
Yeah.
You know, we always like things that we don't have, you know? But what are you really wanting to dig into now? You got your protein, you got the smoothies, but you post a lot of you being ripped and working out.
Yeah. You know, I've found a lot of kind of personal development stuff with fitness. You know, I the gym is kind of like a microcosm of life, you know. Never really want to do it, you know, not sure if you can, want to give up a little early, you know, but you go anyway, and you get the extra rep in anyway. And you're so
convince me, because I'm supposed to go to jiu-jitsu tonight, and I've as I've been sitting here, I've had a 50-50 on it.
Okay.
The entire time. Every 5 minutes it pops in my head. Yeah. And I say to myself, you don't really need to go tonight. You know, you did Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Okay.
You know, do you really need to go? How do I make a decision? Because I earlier today I was thinking, oh, my right arm hurts a little bit. Maybe that's a sign not to go. Because what you're talking about is going anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you get your brain?
You don't. You drag the body and the brain follows. And 10 minutes in, you'll be like, oh, so stupid for thinking about not coming. I love this. What was I ever?
Isn't that so interesting?
How did I ever second guess this? I'm so glad I came. You'd be going home, this hot shower. Oh man, now I'm really going to sleep good. And then tomorrow you'll do it all over again.
I think the same thing applies as we get older with going to a party.
Yeah.
Going out to meet up with people. We're sure. Like, you know, there that one area is fitness, and then the other is
socializing.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of cold in LA.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, people are in Minnesota on an ice skating ring meeting people. And then every time we go out, we say to ourselves, holy shit, the universe just delivered a really cool introduction or person or experience that we're adding to our life. And if we would have been home, nothing new is added. That's the interesting thing about when you stay home. And I've been everyone's turned into a bit of a hermit during COVID, although we've all tried to break free. You know exactly what home is going to look like.
Yeah.
There's everything's predictable.
Nothing new, nothing exciting.
Maybe you'll watch something or maybe a little different type of taco from Postmates. But other than that, it's the same freaking evening.
Yeah. Yeah. Embrace the mystery.
Embrace the mystery. Well, Jeremy, thank you for coming on Always Evolving with Tony and I. And everyone can find you at Jeremy Jackson, right?
At Jeremy Jackson Fitness, yeah.
Jeremy Jackson Fitness on Instagram. And can people, you know, have you as their kind of fitness/coach?
Yeah, I do. I do like transformation coach stuff, breathwork meditation.
You literally do breathwork with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Big passion of mine.
Yeah, that stuff's intense.
Yeah, I did one in the car before I came in here. Yeah.
With who? Yourself?
Yeah.
How long of breathing did you do?
I did 20 minutes. Usually I do like 45.
Your girlfriend's here with you. She did it too?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I did.
Can you imagine the people walking by as you're doing that?
the windows are all fogged up.
With the feather, with the leather jacket, he looks like a badass with the beard, and you see this man just eyes closed.
Huffing and puffing.
You know,
breath work is really powerful.
Yeah, really, I love doing breath work. I need someone to guide me in it.
I would love to do it. Anytime you want.
Oh, I would love to have a breath work party.
I got a pretty cool, I'm kind of like a breath work drill sergeant.
I love it.
I scream and shake. And,
have you ever done breath work, Tony?
No.
Oh, you got what?
I've never done that.
Dude.
Oh, it's on some next level stuff. Oh, it almost feels as if you're having an out of body experience.
Astral projection, the warm embrace of the creative consciousness of the
new
universe.
Awareness comes to you. It's really powerful.
Sounds like we're going to do a TikTok after this.
Yeah.
Well, it's very hard to do within like 10 seconds, Tony.
I mean, we're going to.
We'll try.
We'll figure it out.
We'll bring in the drill sergeant.
Yeah.
All right. So Jeremy Jackson, thanks for coming on Always Evolving. And everyone, keep it magical. Make sure to click to subscribe. And until next time.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kelts is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horinagay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
The Always Evolving with Coach Mike Bear podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional, medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during this podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professionals.